Tottenham story is this. It's time to change the situation if Tottenham want to change.
I love to win, mate. That's the main thing. Hopefully I can fulfil those dreams and aspirations of every Tottenham supporter.
And still Ricky Villa. What a fantastic run. He scored.
That's going to have a crack. He is, you know. Oh, he's there.
Kane is the record.
Here's Lucas Moura.
Oh, they've done it.
I'm loving big engines instead.
Guess I'm a Spurs fan now then.
Well, hi, everybody. Welcome to an instant reaction to the game at Newcastle. And I'm going to do my best to stay as calm and as composed as possible. But oh, my goodness me, that was so, so frustrating. At least we didn't concede a hatful this time. But 3 points are squandered. Yeah, not just one, 3 points. Spurs had complete control of the game. And they end up going home having lost 2-1. I'm Marcus Buckland. Dan Kilpatrick of the Evening Standard is with me. He's in the middle of writing his report. He's waiting for some more Postecoglou quotes. I'm sure we'll hear the same sort of thing from the Spurs manager. Before we get into the details of this desperately disappointing afternoon, Dan, what's the overall gist of your match report for this one?
Hi, Marcus. Well, I did an analysis piece for the website immediately after the game. I'm not actually at St. James's Park today because there were no trains and I couldn't go up last night. So I've just watched it from home. So I've not had the kind of extra perspective, I guess, of being in the ground. But I thought it was, as you said, frustrating and disappointing and familiar, really. I think every Spurs fan will feel like they've seen a version of that match before under Postecoglou. And that was really the gist of my analysis piece, that it feels like Spurs are playing pretty well. I think there's encouragement to take from all three performances this season, and that's definitely something to build on. It's not doom and gloom by any stretch. But familiar problems taking chances, familiar problems switching off at the back, familiar problems controlling the game and capitalising on spells of pressure, I think, and some familiar results, really. That was the gist of it. I also made the point that I think Van de Ven was a miss today. Dragosin did well enough, but his pace against a really, really quick Newcastle front line would have been useful. I think we saw that for the winning goal. And I think, crucially, and this is probably my biggest takeaway, Dominic Solanke already feels like a really important player for Spurs, having just played one game and a fairly quiet game at that. But Spurs just desperately missed a centre-forward and missed a centre-forward this afternoon. And obviously Richarlison was out, as well as Solanke. And Kulusevski in the first half and Son in the second half just don't offer enough of a presence, a bite in the final third. And it was therefore a familiar story of lots of possession, lots of openings, lots of pressure, but not actually that many great chances, I didn't think. Pope made 6 saves, Spurs had 20 shots, but how many were brilliant saves that he wouldn't have been expected to make? I'm not sure any were. So Spurs just need a centre forward, they need a focal point up there, and I think Solanke coming back for Arsenal will hopefully make all the difference.
Yeah, well, let's hope he does come back, because of course He was never injured when he was a Bournemouth player. As soon as he comes to Spurs, he starts picking up knocks. And Richarlison, I'm not sure what's going on there, but of course he would have been a very useful replacement today, wasn't to be. You're absolutely right. I think in the two away games, we, Spurs, have had 35 chances in the matches against Leicester and Newcastle. 35 chances. And you're right, most of them weren't really clear-cut chances, despite the fact that, you know, for a period in that game today, we were grabbing hold of the ball, winning back possession in midfield. It looked every time as though we got the ball in one of those positions that a really good opportunity had to present itself. And for whatever reason, that just didn't happen. And at that point, I'm watching with Luca, my son, at 1-1, and I'm saying, you know, before the game, I'd have taken a point. Now, I'll be really disappointed if we don't get all three, but actually, I know what's going to happen here. We are going to lose. We're going to be exploited through the middle. Lo and behold, that's exactly what happened. And at the end of it, I'm saying, who ultimately is to blame for this, Dan? Because it's not the first time and it won't be the last time it's happened. Is this system fundamentally flawed? Or if we do keep playing like this and start to take chances, are we going to be suitably rewarded for the manner in which Big Ange wants us to play?
Well, funny you use the word rewarded there, because that's exactly what Postecoglou said to Sky in his post-match interview that I've just watched. He said, if we continue playing like this, effectively, we'll get our rewards eventually. So he's kind of confident that Spurs will turn these performances into points and results. And I think that's what you're getting at. I mean, look, to state an obvious point, but not, I'm not sure it's one we've made on this podcast recently, this Spurs side is obviously set up to be an attacking force. You know, it's all about going forward under Postecoglou. All the onus is on getting the ball in the final third. And at the moment, definitely while Solanke's out and getting up to speed, it just feels like Spurs have a much better defence in terms of individuals than they do in an attack. You know, they've got a World Cup winner at the back in Romero. They've got Van de Ven. Dragosin looks like a really accomplished stand-in. And then they've got two, you know, really technical and kind of fun-to-watch fullbacks. But in the final third, they've got these players who, in the case of Odegaard and Johnson, are still kind of young and not consistently delivering. And Son, who kind of can't do it all by himself. And Kulusevski, who I think does blow hot and cold. So it feels like there's a lot of onus on these guys that kind of aren't consistently delivering. And then the guys that are probably more consistent performers at the back are playing this very high-risk approach that it's always going to kind of give up chances, and you kind of need the team to already be two or three clear, and they rarely are because there's not enough quality in the final third yet. So I hope that makes sense, but it does feel like until, you know, Spurs sort of click, which we've been saying for the best part of a year, or, you know, someone like Solanke comes in and starts consistently taking the chances, then this is going to be a problem, because Ange Ball is always going to give up chances. The two goals today, I thought you could say were basically a direct consequence of what he's asking the players to do, of the tactics. You know, the first goal, Romero presses high. Can't really blame Romero for that, because that's what all the players are told to do. You press high and he gets dragged out of position. Spurs switch off from a throw-in, which they have done more than once in the past. And then Newcastle score a really good finish from Barnes. And the second goal is obviously a high-line goal. Spurs are a bit flat. They're switched off again, and in one pass picks them open, and Murphy, he's really quick, gets behind Udogi, who was, I think, flagging from about 10-15 minutes before that and doesn't look fully fit yet. So these are the risks of Ange Ball, I guess. And in order for those risks to be kind of mitigated, you need someone who's going to put away chances. And at the moment, Spurs don't have that. They don't have the clinical centre-forward. They don't have Solanke fit.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's an excellent assessment. And, you know, ultimately, then you've answered my question. For now, at least, it's a fundamentally flawed system, because until we have at least one striker scoring on a regular basis, then this sort of thing's going to keep on happening. I only hope you're right. There's no reason to doubt Solanke. I hope he is going to be the player to score enough goals, because the finishing, the decision-making, Dan, of some of the others, I mean, Odegaard's coming. I like the look of him, but he wasn't gambling when the balls were coming across the six-yard box. He doesn't look like a natural finisher. The one big chance he had, he tried to volley it in, or did it go off his knee? I don't know. But, you know, from the moment I saw it, you know, live, I thought he's got to head that one. So, you know, they are not natural finishers. Johnson came on. I thought he was lively in the second half. He had opportunities. He had lots of space. But And then you look at the replays afterwards and you're actually thinking, well, hang on a minute, though. Where should he have passed that ball? Because there was all this space, and yet we go back to the fact that clear-cut opportunities never seem to accrue from all the excellent possession we picked up. So I found that curious. What about Maddison? Because, you know, he flickered in, he had his moments. Where's he at? Because I think he's obviously such an important player as well for Spurs, but I get the suspicion, you know, I know it's dangerous to go onto social media, etc., but I think a lot of people are still questioning whether we're ever going to see the Maddison that lit up the first two or three months of last season.
I think that's really harsh on Maddison. I think he's made a great start to the season. He's been involved in three goals in as many games. He was involved in the goal today. It was a bit of a tame shot, but he forced Pope into a save, and that's what made the equaliser. Johnson reacting really well, and he's got assists in the other two games. I think Maddison started really well, and he's gradually, perhaps not quite there, but getting back to being one of the best playmakers in the Premier League. I don't think he's a huge concern. He wasn't as good today as he was in the other two games, but Newcastle are a better team than Leicester and Everton, and they are a very solid defensive unit and kind of packed that box and made it hard for Spurs. But I think you know, just to go back to the centre forward issue, the amount of time Spurs put in quite a nice cross, and Johnson did at least three in the second half. I thought they were really well placed across the 6-yard box. There were at least two from Son from the other side, from the left in the first half as well when he was out there. And there was just no one on the end of them in the right place. And you would hope that Solanke or Richarlison, who had a great link up with Johnson, incidentally, last season, would have been on the end of at least one, if not more. Kulusevski works really hard off the ball, but I can see why Postecoglou doesn't want to play him as a false nine in the Premier League, or has said that's not his best position. And Son, we know he can be lethal against certain teams in that position. He was really good against Everton, but the big, big problem last year in the 4-0 defeat in Newcastle, if you remember, was that Son played through the middle and Spurs couldn't hold up the ball. It just kept coming back. They kept going direct to Son, and Newcastle kept mopping it up and getting back on the front foot. And I think Postecoglou was conscious of that today, and that's why he played Kulusevski there from the start. And that was a problem again in the second half, really. It didn't stick to Son. It doesn't really stick to him because he's not that kind of forward. And it all came back to, I think, not having a striker. I mean, we can't kind of... I suppose we can't pin everything on that, because there will be times when your strikers will be injured, obviously, and Spurs need to find a way to win games when that's the case. But that felt like the crux of the problem to me today.
Yeah, and it's really easy, Dan, and I do feel deflated. I felt deflated after the first game of the season at Leicester. I mean, we put Everton to bed comfortably. Everton obviously are not a very good team. That was encouraging. I think when the disappointment of the result wears off, there is a lot to be encouraged about. But the bottom line is we've played three games this season. We've picked up 4 points. We've now got to wait for 2 weeks because of an international break. And then we've got Arsenal straight after that break, which becomes a monumentally important game. And I just find it really hard to come up with any proper assessment, because I don't want to rail at Pedro Porro, who at times, I know he had more shots than anybody else today. And when he scores, they're fantastic, but I never think he's going to score. And I do still feel that he gets caught out of position, which is understandable to a degree because of the system that's being played, but he also gives the ball away a lot in very dangerous areas. There are things that I want to park for the moment, but I just find it really difficult now to predict what is going to happen and what will represent a good season. In terms of finishing in the top four, I'm not sure. You've touched upon it again, and we did a couple of weeks ago. It's a very young, inexperienced team. And I think it was your article, actually, I read a day or two ago, saying that the way Spurs are doing business, it is certainly not for a title run this season. All being well, if they continue to accumulate the parts, then in maybe 2-3 years' time, this will be a title-winning squad. But the danger with that, of course, things can change in 2 or 3 years. And if you ever try building for the long-term future, it never actually happens. So I'm just a little bit flat. I just can't work out, you know, what's going to happen, what should happen, who I should be blaming, you know, I don't want to blame anybody, but, you know, I've got to blame somebody for that. Blame myself for being a Spurs fan.
I think there's an extent to which judging any team in August is unfair. I think that there's a quote I heard on another podcast from an Italian football expert. I think it was Sarri. It was an Italian football manager. He said August football is a lie. It doesn't kind of represent. It doesn't give you a true representation, I guess, of what a team's going to be over the course of the season. It still feels very early. So, but I get what you're saying, because I went into the Newcastle game thinking, actually, this is going to be an interesting test for sort of judging where Spurs are, in a way that Leicester and Everton weren't, really, because Everton are so poor. And the Leicester game, I thought, was a bit of a funny game, and it was the opening day. But I actually didn't come away from the Newcastle game learning anything particularly new about Spurs. And again, that's not to say that it's all doom and gloom, that there's plenty of encouragement there in the way Spurs played their football. But I was still kind of left feeling, okay, they're still not a team that is consistently able to take chances. They're still a team that lacks a focal point in the centre forward. And they're still a team that is kind of fine-tuning Ange Ball and is giving up chances because of the way they're playing, if that makes sense. So, yeah, I know what you mean. It does feel a little bit hard to sort of say where Spurs are going now. But then I don't think we really need to predict the future. It is still incredibly early days. And I think Arsenal's always a big game. It doesn't matter what run Spurs are on. So it doesn't really bother me that Spurs have had a mixed start and are going into that game. It wouldn't matter if they'd won all three. It would still feel like a massive game, I think, in the same way. The away game last year was disappointing, but the home game was a really encouraging performance. And I think at home, Spurs always tend to kind of raise their game for this one. So it might be quite a good one to kind of kickstart the season as well.
Well, hopefully, but I mean, it goes without saying they've got to start taking their chances. And for as long as we don't do that, we can play all this wonderful, attacking football up to a certain point and be left with nothing. But I think, what I'm left with is I don't want to hear anybody else moaning about the transfer window. And I think our plan hopefully next week is to do a little bit of a more detailed assessment of who came in and who has gone out of the club up to the end of the August transfer window. That has happened. I personally think, they've brought in some really exciting young players. I still think that Johnson's going to turn out to be a terrific player. I really want to keep believing that, and I will for the moment. And the other thing is, we are going to be prone to conceding the sort of goals that we have conceded again today. But you've always said, as Ange's number one apologist, you've always backed him, that there will be no compromises. So I am not going to shout at the clouds and moan anymore about playing out from the back. I will still shout out about the ridiculous number of unnecessary free kicks that Spurs continue to give away, often in their attacking third, when they break down a move that may be petering out anyway, but it loses all momentum. It allows the opposition to get themselves back into place. It absolutely does my head in. I really wish they would look at that. I wish they'd cut down on the short corners, but I accept that Ange is there. He's going to play to his principles. We have to accept that. But you're right. Solanke's got to come in and start proving he's a one-in-two man. And Richarlison's got to stay fit and start showing that when he comes off the bench, he can do that. And I guess if that happens, there are reasons to be optimistic. It's just that when you see a match like that, Dan, and you think we should have 9 points from nine this season, and we've only got four. And I just find that very galling.
Yeah, I get that it's very, very frustrating. I think you touched on it there, perhaps with the free kicks, but Spurs are obviously a young team. They've got a lot of young players in the side, and obviously Odegaard's come in and he's a teenager who's now apparently starting in the front three, and I think he's full of promise. But what we saw from him today, and perhaps what we saw from Johnson against Leicester, is that these guys aren't going to kind of consistently deliver or consistently hit the levels. They are still kind of work in progress. And it was funny, me and Sean did the reaction pod after the Everton game, and we were kind of saying, oh, is Brennan Johnson a worry? Is he going to lose his place in the 11 now Odegaard's come in and put in a really bright performance on debut? Then, a week later, we're doing a reaction pod, and you'd say now Odegaard's the one whose place is a threat for Johnson for the Arsenal game. And I guess is a consequence of these guys not being kind of Mo Salah and Son, players who are going to start every week. They are still kind of finding their feet at this level. And I think Spurs feel like a team that still are a bit kind of young and naive at times in the way they manage the game. And we saw that against Leicester when they felt in total control but kind of completely squandered that control and looked very spooked by Vardy's equaliser. So, yeah, I think that they do feel like a work in progress, really. But yeah, I'm still more encouraged. I'm, as you said, apologist, I would say optimist, but I'm still kind of more encouraged than worried by the way they've started the season. There's plenty to build on there. They just need to be a bit more savvy and a bit smarter in front of goal.
Yeah, I would definitely echo that. And I also think, I'm actually not so bothered where we finish in the league. It's always, top four, blah, 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 blah. I just think that this team will not probably finish in the top four, but I really do believe it could win a cup or have a really good run in Europe because they have got the players to flicker into life. And one can only hope that, those days where they take those chances are in cup games, during that long Europa League campaign. The draw, you know, looks interesting as well. So that's going to be my focal point. Let's not talk about can we finish fourth or fifth or sixth. And this is where Ange, by the way, has got to get absolutely right, starting with the game at Coventry in the Cup. Got to get his best possible teams lined up. Would you not agree for those matches? We do not want any sort of a repeat of the Fulham Cup tie from 12 months ago.
Well, I think he will rotate because that's always what managers do. But yeah, I agree that with this squad looking deeper, and it does feel deeper, we'll get into this in detail on the transfer pod. But by way of example, I thought Dragosin had a pretty good game today. I thought kind of Spurs both missed Van de Ven and he played well, if that makes sense. Van de Ven is just such a unique player. But racing back to dispossess Barnes early on, racing back to tackle Isak just after half time, which would have been a really, really bad time to concede. I thought he did well and he's good on the ball. So he's supposed to do have a deeper squad. You know, it's not like, with the greatest respect, Dyer or Davinson Sanchez will be coming in. I think certainly Sanchez played that game at Fulham last year, if I remember, and Højbjerg and many others who aren't at the club now. So Ange will be able to rotate and still have a kind of more Ange Bawley team. You know, I'd like to see Bergvall start, for example. I think that's exactly the kind of game we want to see him in. So I think there will be rotations, but yeah, I agree. It's really important for Spurs to make a fist of both Cups and the Europa League this year, because in spite of what Ange said in April, and I touched on this in a column I did on the transfer window today, you know, Spurs don't look like a team that are going to challenge for the title again this season. They just don't. But they do look like a team that are building a squad that could challenge in a year or 2 years' time. They've got a lot of really promising players who are sort of 22, 23, 24, and a lot of really promising teenagers now as well, in Gray, Bergvall, Moore, and Odebear, and there are others. I think Alfie Devine was on the bench today, having not secured a loan. So, you know, there's a lot of young talent in the Spurs squad. I understand that fans have been hearing this for the best part of 25 years, you know.
Try 45 years, Dan.
45 years, you know, and it's really, really frustrating. And they don't want to think that they have to go through another rebuild, because they sat through one with Pochettino and nothing kind of came of it trophy-wise. But the club had to dramatically change direction when Ange came in, because, frankly, it had been a dreadful few years and with a load of misguided decisions and poor signings and poor managerial appointments. And they've started again. And when you start again, it generally does not take a year or two to bring success. It takes three or four. I mean, look at Arteta at Arsenal or Klopp at Liverpool or many other examples. So I think a bit of perspective is needed when we're kind of looking at these individual games that feel very frustrating and very familiar.
Yeah, I agree. There is a bigger picture, and I, for one, am going to be incredibly positive over the next few weeks and months.
Good man. I was actually minorly dreading this pod because I thought you were going to be in full rant mode, but you're very measured.
No. I see what you're saying, and I see where the club wants to go, and I think we just need the majority of the fans, hopefully, to, you know, to keep the faith, because otherwise, what do? We start again? No. I mean, Ange has got, he's got his issues, of course he has, but I think genuinely, if he can get the system to work the way he wants to, we're in for an exciting time. So let's bring it on. Couple of weeks off and we start again. And as I mentioned, at least one of the Toms, hopefully both the Toms, will be back during the week, and we'll run the rule in a little more detail over those players who finally said goodbye to the club. Ndombele is one of those, isn't he? There isn't some little clause that says he's still lurking around in the car park waiting to be reintroduced again.
I believe he is one of them, yeah.
I'll never believe that ever. But obviously a lot went right up until the last few minutes of the transfer window closing. So we'll talk about that during the week. Then there's the break. And then, of course, the small matter of the home game against Arsenal. Danny Boy, look forward to reading your stuff in The Standard. And probably just as well that there was a train. Was there a train strike today? What's going on?
There was a train strike and then they called off the train strike, but there were limited trains, so I couldn't get a seat. And I toyed with going up last night, but I had something on. So I've I'm sat in a very, very hot room kind of watching it on TV, and I've now got United Liverpool on, so I can't complain really.
No. And the other good thing is that that's it. We don't have to go back to St James's Park this season. Well, except we'll probably get drawn against them in the cup or something like that. But Danny Boy, thank you. Dan Kilpatrick of the Evening Standard. I am Marcus Buckland. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, come on, you Spurs.